Inseparable Friends is about discovering personal solutions to life's everyday challenges. We welcome the support of like-minded individuals to help reveal our inner wisdom. Our listeners display virtuous values based on varying religious and secular perspectives. Yet our common desire is to live authentic lives that lead to reliable happiness. With many distractions at work and at home, we struggle to live up to our ideals. Yet there are times when we triumph. By generously sharing these first-person experiences, our resolve to live authentically is recharged, and our admirable friendship is strengthened. Together, each week, we explore an unwanted emotion and its matching ideal mind quality. The overriding context of our journey is what, when we do it, leads us out of stress and towards reliable happiness. We're grateful to have you join us today.
Well, welcome. Another wonderful Tuesday night with our admirable friends.
Good evening.
And you're laughing because, you know, if the listening audience could actually see if we were like on TV, and they could see what was going on behind the scenes, like C-SPAN, they would see it's like Laurel and Hardy meet Abbott and Costello tonight. It was just a comedy of error, and it was very funny. And it's sort of like sliding into the chair at the last minute. And
microphone wouldn't work.
Yeah, just crazy
stuff. I run out
stuff.
To the other room. If they could see all that, I'm running out to get the plug. And
Hold on. I know. And I think everybody's in for a treat tonight because I don't think we know what quite to expect because we're having a guest on tonight.
I know. And it's really good, too, because I'm sure our listening audience has heard enough about us. And
well, it takes the pressure off of me. That's for sure. Let somebody else be, you know, in the hot seat.
Well, you're not totally off, because before we can introduce our guests, we have to tell us what you're grateful for.
Yes, I do. And I think what you were going to do tonight, though, you were going to explain about gratitude and why it's important to be grateful. Weren't we going to do that tonight?
Oh. Yeah.
No?
It was because the other night when we had a group meeting, there was a big quiet when I asked, what is everybody grateful for? And you said, I'm not sure they understand why they can express their gratitudes. So I guess the reason, besides just being grateful, the reason we dig down deep and we actually practice with our will or our intention for gratitudes is because it gets us going in the opposite direction the way we normally go. We normally look for something out of the world, right? So we ask what's in it for me all the time. We're always looking for happiness. All our actions, not all of them, but most of them are geared to trying to make ourselves happy. But when we stop and we reflect at what we're grateful for, it kind of gets us into a giving mode. It gets us thinking outside of our own narrative, our own storyline, and towards others. So it's a practice that doesn't come natural, but you can certainly will it, and you can do it twice a day, three times a day, and it has amazing effects.
It does. And it opens, it's just an opening. It opens your heart, and it's a very giving, outward kind of.
Yes. So now that I've given you enough time to come up with your gratefuls, what do you got?
I already had it well in advance. I was just, you know.
Go ahead.
Bossing you around. there's a special birthday in our family that's coming up on Saturday. And that's your stepdad's birthday. He's going to be 90 years old. And I just thought how grateful we are to have him as part of the family and having him share his wisdom with us and his life. And just he's a very giving and admirable person, and I consider him an admirable friend as well as a family member.
That's great, and I would agree with you. We are fortunate to have, and fortunate for Mom that she was able to meet somebody after my dad passed away, and after being married for so many years, and then how long has she been married to Al now?
Gosh,
15 years.
Close, yeah.
But he's 90. She's almost 90. They're crackers.
They are. They're just, I mean, They're just wonderful people and wonderful together. And
we know they're out there. They're listening. Except they catch us there in Florida, and they're an hour ahead. So they're sleeping like all Florida residents are at this point.
That's shameful. You're gonna catch it tomorrow when she hears
you. They catch it on podcast the next day.
You figure it'll be after the fact. It won't have very much of
they can't
talk
back on broadcast.
Bad.
Okay. Well, before we introduce Tom, I'm grateful. As you know, I went up to our old development, which is real estate development, and I spent the day with my partner, who I hadn't seen in a couple of years, David, and I'm grateful for him. It was just really good to see him, and we gave each other a big hug. And you know, when you have a friend like that from business and dealing with pretty large volume of money and investment in that whole project up in Gainesville, the 500-acre project, to have a friend after that is just a...
That speaks volumes, doesn't it?
It speaks volumes, the type of guy he is, and I'm really grateful for him.
Nice. Well, and this is kind of an additive gratitude, but having Tom on tonight, too, because...
Oh, we go by fullback.
Yeah, I mean, kind of that's along the same lines, you know, started out as...
Well, that's a good introduction. We're going to introduce Tom Sapienza to the show. Hello, Tom. Uh-oh. Tom, you with us?
I am. Can you hear me?
I can.
There you
there
are.
Was a
hey,
slight
Tom.
Delay there.
Here I am.
Oh, great.
Hello, everybody.
Hey. Tom is... Tom and Carol and I go back a long way.
We do.
When we started our first... Actually, it was our first company.
Right.
That we took public up in New England, and Tom was our chief financial officer.
He was.
Actually started... Tom, why don't you give some background about yourself? You know, you can talk a little bit about the business, of course.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, let me start out with a gratitude of my own, a birthday gratitude also. It's our granddaughter Madison's 1 month birthday today.
Oh.
So she's our first, as you know, you guys know, our first grandchild, and we're over the top. And we paid a surprise visit to them tonight. And as we were driving up the road to my daughter Marie's house, she called to talk to her mom, the fabulous Lisa, and was saying how much she missed her. Of course, we just saw them yesterday. But the baby was being real fussy today. And we hung up and, you know, Lisa walked in the front door. And so I just really am grateful for everything related to this baby. It's just wonderful. So
it's a wonderful thing being a grandparent.
It's amazing. Better than it's cracked up to be, and it's all the joy and none of the pressure. It's one of the happiest, happy grandchild. you know, when our children were born, right, Buddy and Carol?
Absolutely.
We love them just as much, but there's all this pressure, too, because it's like, oh, this is great joy, but then it's like, oh my God, all this responsibility. I've got to make sure. Can I provide for them? Am I going to do something that's going to mess up their lives forever? that's all Matt and Marie can worry about that now. Lisa and I just have all the good parts. Everything.
And she's adorable too. The pictures are absolutely, she's just beautiful. Just beautiful.
Oh, thank you. So anyway, well, I'm happy to be here. And, we go back a long ways, back to 1981. And if I accidentally call Buddy Al, that's because he was Al back then. That's his given name. And his family called him Buddy, but, you know, I felt kind of funny working for him, calling him that. So if I slip once in a while. My background, I was born and raised in Connecticut and went to Catholic schools up through high school and went to University of Connecticut. Accounting major and done an MBA and a CPA and worked in the insurance industry for a while and then with a Big Eight, back then it was the Big Eight accounting firm, Arthur Young. And that's how I came in contact with Al's firm. And of course, back then, Al, I think, was, I see I'm calling him Al now, Buddy was about 24, 25. I was about 27. And Buddy and this other guy, Rich Jefferson, that founded this company, were, you know, literally just like Apple Computer in the garage. So I thought I was going off to Apple Computer to work with Jobs and the Woz. And didn't quite turn out that way, but I'll tell you, it was the most incredible experience of my life. And I still, I learned so much from that, those years we spent together. And it was just an incredible learning experience. And from there, I went to another software startup. That's what that was, a software startup. And I went to another one, still trying to, get rich, find happiness through wealth. And that didn't work out too good. We were with some venture capitalists, and the sales numbers didn't go, so they fired the CFO. And I went on and doing consulting, and I was doing pretty good with the consulting. But one of my consulting projects, this has been, and now we're up to 1992, was with a company, Milford, New Hampshire, actually a multi-recreational facility, large one, amazingly large. One of the top ones really in the world. You wouldn't expect to find it in New Hampshire. And I went there on a 60-day consulting project to get them to run like a business because their parent company was being sold off. And hit it off with the general manager who was in the process of purchasing it. And then I came to a crossroads then. I had a chance for a big consulting job down in Connecticut lined up. Of course, I live in New Hampshire. My children were little, and I said, you know what? What do I really want out of life? And what I wanted to do was watch my kids grow up. I was tired of getting home after they went to bed and being at the whims of people who all they cared about was money. And I made a decision to take a very substantial pay cut and do this. And I've never looked back. 22 years ago, our kids grow up, three children. We work hard, but the clubs, we're open 7 days a week, so I can kind of adjust my schedule. And I stopped missing things at their school, and I was able to coach sports teams and, follow my, particularly my son played a lot of sports and follow him around. And, it's been great. In the service business, we're doing great things for people. Sports and fitness was always my hobby, and I got to work at my hobby, and I also work in the same town where I live, no long commutes, and it's just been wonderful. But it was funny because if I hadn't gotten fired and hadn't been out on my own and hadn't been forced to really think about it, I never would have done this on my own. I never would have made that move. And so life sometimes, one door closes, another opens.
Right.
And it's been wonderful. And Buddy and I have stayed in contact over the years, sometimes more, sometimes less. But it doesn't matter how much space and time between our conversations. We could talk a week apart or we could talk a year apart. And we just pick up right where we left off. And I've followed his development. And those of you out there, I can't talk about myself without talking about Buddy. I know we're supposed to talk in first person. But when Buddy, back in the good old days in the 80s, I had a saying about him. Because he used to walk with such a forward lean. And I'd say, you know something? If he ever slowed down, he'd fall in his face. And that was really true. And he was just go, go, go. Give you a feel. Right now, we all have cell phones. And all of us have used our cell phone in the bathroom, right? Well, these are the days before cell phones. Buddy had a phone put in his private bathroom in his office at work. So you'd be talking to him, and all of a sudden you hear this.
Yeah, I learned that from Archie Bunker. Remember Archie Bunker?
I know.
He used to run up the stairs.
That's.
I'm glad you put that on the radio.
Anybody had cell phones.
We're talking authentic here. We're shifting.
We're shifting the conversation.
We're definitely shifting the conversation.
I hope you practice forgiveness, forgiving me in advance, because I've forgiven you in advance. I'm sure you're going to put me through the ringer.
No. But, okay. Well, let's talk.
Well, wait a minute. Most of
Carol likes it.
Go ahead, Tom.
No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and
not just through business, but because we made a personal connection and we kind of shared a lot more of a bond, I think the general audience would like to know that you're also godson to our youngest son, a godfather to our youngest son.
Yeah.
So
Aaron, he's amazing. He's amazing.
A real blessing.
Little
for
Aaron.
Us. He's not little.
Yeah,
anymore.
And you know, even there, you know, with Aaron, you know, I've always lived in New Hampshire since you've known me, and you've lived, I probably could count the states you haven't lived in, you know, Texas and Florida and Pennsylvania and Vermont. And, you know, I don't think I was probably the best of all. Had a lot of, you know, contact with Aaron growing up as a godfather. It's amazing to me when Aaron got married last year, he reached out to me, invited me to the wedding, and we were thrilled to go when we went. And then what, just showed you what type of person Aaron is, when he was talking to everybody at the wedding, giving kind of the groom's speech there, he made a big deal about me being there. And it was the most amazing feeling. And that's something that, you know, he not only gets from his mother, but he also gets from his father, because I always saw great compassion in Buddy, even in Buddy's, you know, fast-moving days, there was compassion there, and there was something I always knew to myself. Buddy was going to do great things that had nothing to do with businesses, and he's doing great things right now. So I'm just really, really thrilled to know all you guys.
Oh, thank you.
Well, thanks for the kind
thanks
words.
For the
that's
kind
really
words.
Sweet.
Let's flip it back to you though. So
it's going to be all about you tonight.
Tonight. So let's look at you. You just took that strengths assessment, and you're. And I shared these with the chat window with anyone that has their computer on. They can go to the chat window. But your top five strengths, Tom, were relator, responsibility, harmony, and restorative. And for those of you that haven't done the strengths assessment, each one of the relator, for instance. Well, Tom, talk us through those top five. How did you know, this is the car you drive. This is how you behave. It's obviously not limiting to the total person you are, because I've watched you evolve and learn from your actions and keep evolving. But push comes to shove, this is what we can expect out of Tom on a day-to-day basis, isn't it?
Hmm. Yeah, I think so. You know, I think it pretty much nailed it with me. You know, I like to kind of simplify things. I've always seen myself as a really good number two guy. As number two, and I work with you as number two, and the other software company, it's number one for a while in my consulting, but I'm number two now in the business that we have. And that's really where I'm best. You know, I'm not a good number one guy, but I'm a great number two guy. And I think you see some of that.
You actually see in your color codes, you have all the relationship talents as well as the thinking talents in your top five. The relationship and the executing talents, which basically say you're really connected well with others and you get things done. But the influencing, which is that orange color, doesn't appear in your top five. And those are usual, those, you know, lead dog type of thing, and are in those orange talents. So, again, it's... You can lead from the number two. You know that, Tom. You led us through lots of transactions in a number two position. It's surely just part of the team. It doesn't mean that you're not by any means second best. Yeah.
Well, thank you. I understand that. I think what brings that to light is.
I hope others understand that too, because you know everybody's looking for that perfect talent code. It doesn't exist.
No. But I think. What pulls it together for me too is restorative. I mean, that's why we've done turnarounds. I've probably turned our business around, and I'm in now two or three times. There's a problem. Okay, how do we fix it? And people come to me daily with their problems, and I do my best to fix them. And so there's that restorative piece. So I think that's the other piece to me. I'm a good number two guy. I'm really good. What's broke? How do we fix it?
And you know, did you notice, Tom, when you looked at those strengths? at least I noticed right away why I asked you to come in for the discernment category. Because the restorative and the connectedness, I mean, you're a consummate problem solver. You're going to dig down to the details to solve it. You're going to look at things beyond the face value. And that connectedness shows that you know that everything is connected in one way or another. So you're always looking for those connections, aren't you?
Yeah. No, I definitely, discernment is definitely something I do better. You know, the 10 qualities, some I don't do so well, but.
Yeah, and it's right there on his profile.
I'm always thinking, analyzing, figuring out what can I do. You know, how can I do it better? How can I learn? How can I learn from this? I really believe that you're going forward or backwards in life. There's no such thing as standing still. So,
but if you look at also your values, that kind of points you. Now you could be discerning, and you could value I don't know, skydiving. But your values kind of point that discernment towards, let's just read those values off, Carol, those top five values.
Well, the top five values were honesty,
yeah,
family, health, spirituality, and altruism.
So there's no wonder he becomes an admirable friend.
Absolutely not. It's like, that's right there.
Right? It's no wonder he's here. He values this, number one. Number two, he's got discernment, which basically, in the big picture, is saying, this is something that I choose to do because it's going to help me towards reliable happiness.
Right.
So those two assessments really point you, nail you pretty good, Tom.
Yeah, they did.
Now, there's a whole lot of room for growth in what you do and how you execute it, and these are always meant as guidelines because, as you know, the whole thing with admirable friends and the practice is we're trying to step out of our own patterns, mm-hmm. our own behavior, right? But it's interesting how we start with our behavior and take inventory of it. You know, there's others that would take something like that and could take a narcissistic view and do nothing but talk about themselves. But Tom, can you speak to that? I mean, even though you were aware of these talents probably at a young age, have you always found that you're not really attached to them, that you look at as nothing special, it's just the way you are? Or how do you relate to these talents?
Well, I think I, at a very young age, I was asking questions, and I don't think I came up with the right answers. Obvious, you know, we didn't have a lot growing up, my family. We did, like, never wanted anything. My parents were very quiet. And so there wasn't a lot of, instruction. So I learned a lot, once again, before personal computers. Now the kids all Google. But I learned a lot because we lived a few blocks from a library, and I used to go there, and I'd just grab a book, and I'd want to learn about something. I'd look it in the books. So I came very kind of independent, almost too much so,
right.
In terms of feeling I could figure everything out on my own. And I did pretty good at that. You know, as a youth, I made a lot of good decisions and made some that could have been better if I had some advice. But, was always in that learning, always questioning. And I always thought, my parents are, very quiet. They sent me to, they were able to send me to a private high school. So I'm in with all these kids that came from families that had more than my family. And so I grew up a little bitter about that, and then I was, like, really driven to, like, okay, I'm going to turn everything around here, and, I'm going to break the chain. And I did, but what I found in the smoke clear, I find myself in my older age going back to a lot of my parents' values. Like, my mom never really gets too high or too low.
Yeah.
I'm calling her the Buddha now. I didn't recognize that until the last few years, but she really is. And she's now 94 years old, and she lived independently till last November, and then we had to go through a process where she had several falls, got her into a nursing home, and I saw her depressed for the first time in her life. Now, she's had a hard life, and she never, so tough, but it took us a month and a half or 2 months to get her. Now she's back the way she was, but that was such a, losing her independence was just a huge blow, but all I see now, her life has just been centered. She doesn't get too excited about the good, and she doesn't get too down about the bad. And I find myself saying, wow, that's kind of a good way to be. So I kind of find myself going back to the simple values of my parents. They led very simple lives, and I thought that was a bad thing. And now I've gone full cycle and starting to, you know, what clutter can I get out of my life? So, but I was always asking these questions ever since I was little. Maybe 12. Well,
questions like who you were or what's the meaning of life?
What's my purpose? What's important to me? What choices should I be making? My two best friends growing up ended up being alcoholics, so. And I was in with that crowd, and it's amazing that, but I had this kind of thinking, this can't really be the right way to go, which is from where we're sitting now, it's pretty obvious. But, as a teenager, you're being pulled in a lot of directions. So I was able to kind of step back, and I do some stupid things, and I learn from them and move on and keep moving forward. And I think that's...
So you clearly learned from your mistakes, you think, through your life?
Yeah, and I study things a lot, too. I know when I was a kid, I was a big Davy Crockett fan. And one of the books about Davy Crockett, there was a statement. He said, know you're right, then go ahead. And that's the one thing in my life that, actually, another, we use the PI, Prandex, at our business. And I did mine 20 years ago. That was one of the things that came up. I was like, Tom's going to sit back and analyze, not really take sides, and kind of go through. But once Tom figures out that he's got it nailed, he becomes an expert in something. Tom is like, it just changes. Another switch goes on, and he's like, whoa! You've probably seen that. And but it takes me a long time. I really analyze things, and some of the things the Gallup survey, I'm going to go to get expert advice. When I was young, the expert advice was at the library. Now I'm older, it's going out, researching, Googling, it's talking to people. I've got people now in the business, people we use on a consulting basis for various things. I'm always bouncing ideas off them or issues off them. What do you think? So, but people that I really respect as experts, I'm not just asking anybody. It takes a while.
So you really make a big judgment as to who you associate yourself with.
Oh yeah, yeah. I can be very personable, but it's hard to get close to me until
I start really trusting
and feeling trusted. And then it kind of just, and once again, they described it right here. It's pretty amazing. They really kind of nailed it. Some of the, if you go into some of the things they said about me and how that my relationships develop, and we just have a small group of friends. Our family is big, and my relationship with a lot of my family is like the relationship I have with you, Buddy, and Carol. I have loads of cousins, and we can not talk to each other for years, and then we just pick up the conversation. And,
well, that relator talent, which is your number one talent, I call that the mafia talent.
Because
what it is, it's a very discerning choice. He picks his friends very specifically. He's not relating with everybody. He has few deep
relationships. So it's not a woo person. He's not winning everybody over.
No, he's not woo, winning everybody over, which is a nice talent in and of itself.
Yeah.
Great for marketing, but Tom's going to... And this is number one talent, so that he clearly assessed that I'm gonna pick my friends. And but getting back to this learning from mistakes, Tom, can you help with our audience? Because the most difficult thing we always hear is how do we learn from our mistakes and not take it personal?
Yeah.
Because there's always that feeling that we're beating ourselves up. I've never heard you beat yourself up.
No, I do in my inner mind. There's a conversation on there. But, one thing when I was coaching sports, particularly baseball, I tell the kids, these are like 11, 12-year-old kids. We had a saying, edit, adjust, forget. And so my little shortstop, the ball would come through, go through his legs, And I'd go, how could you, what could you have done to maybe get yourself in a better position? Okay, So next time you're going to adjust it, then forget about it. No value judgment here. Not saying you're a great player, not saying you're a bad player. Not making any value judgments on you. We're just saying, here's one specific instance, this one ground ball. Edit, adjust, and forget. And
edit, adjust, and forget.
I try to apply that to my life. It's a lot harder. You know, it sounds easy. It was easy for me to tell it to the kids. But putting in my shoes as an adult, it's harder. I got to work at that. Edit and adjusting comes easy, but then you got to forget. You got to just put it behind you. You know, it's past. You can't. You got to go forward.
That's really cool. I just chatted that edit for anybody that wants to see that little recipe. I think that's really cool, Tom. Edit, adjust, and forget, right? And I titled that Tom's Way to Depersonalize His History, because that's how we learn, don't we? We really learn if we can just look at it in an impersonal way.
Oh yeah, and that's something I've had to struggle with my entire life, because there is some passion here. You know, I am passionate about the things I really believe in. I'm passionate about justice. I think, you know, that's number 10 on my list of values. But integrity and honesty is number one, and I am passionate about that. And when I see things that are wrong, whether it's a wrong towards me or wrong to somebody else, I get my back up, and I have to learn that, you know, and I am, I'm learning to step back.
You've got somebody smiling on the show here that nobody can see, Tom.
I have
another self-righteous person over here.
Yeah, that's kind of my double-edged sword right there.
Yeah, nice. We have a lot in common then. Buddy, we talked about on the phone, sometimes on the show, but a lot of times off the air. Things I've been learning from going through the 10 weeks with you. And one of the things, I know it's coming up in the future, but forgiveness. But I mentioned to you the other day that I kind of upped it a notch, because what I'm finding is, okay, like I'm driving my car and somebody cuts me off. And they're right on my tailgate, because I like to drive relaxed, you know. And then I get mad at them, and then it goes away, and then I go through the whole process. I calm down. I'm like, okay, and I find, I forget. Say, look, it's not a big deal. I forgive them. Now what I do is, before I get in the car to drive, I forgive people in advance. And so the thing's done, and I learned that from the show, because there's a conversation going. And I think that's the greatest thing about this show. There's a lot of great things, but that there's a conversation. So you have this conversation. And now there's a give and take. So instead of me having a conversation my whole life with myself or with books, I'm having it with people that I really respect and admire and value their opinions and their thoughts and their ideals. And then we have this give and take. And, you know, you've always been very honest. You've been honest when you're giving me good news or giving me bad news. And I love that. And so this conversation, and I hope that's what people out there listening will take part in this conversation, whether it's calling in or whether it's through the chat or whether it's just with their own group of admirable friends on their own. But have a conversation. If you can find someone to have this conversation, your life will be so enriched.
Well, the best is yet to come, Tom, because this is the first of many interviews Carol and I are going to do. We never intended to be broadcasting our deal forever. And so it's just, we're sitting here smiling and saying, and I've got like 7 or 8 people that we work with at Fort Worth. I just can't wait till they come on the show.
I think it's great. It's just going to open story, up, you know, so much for the,
because you learn so much listening from other people, like that little gem that he's got. I don't edit, adjust, and forget. It's so simple. You know, and he told it to kids coaching. Mm. So look what he did for those kids. We're dealing with so many parents today. You know, get out of your own way. Don't blame yourself. He taught those kids. Edit,
right.
Forget,
I mean,
adjust.
that's a slogan we all can
edit,
use.
Edit, adjust, forget, huh?
That's a slogan we all can use.
Yeah, but it's a practice, isn't it, Tom?
Is.
It all boils down to a practice. Just like you go to the gym and you're a physical fitness buff. Any of these mental things that we're working with, you got to practice them.
Yeah, it's... And, you know, with the fitness, you know, what I tell people, you know, they ask me, well, how do I get really fit? And I say, the answer is simple. If you want to be fit, do what fit people do. It's not, you know, I can help you an hour a day in the gym, but what do you do the other 23 hours? So you're faced with all these choices. So right. Your choice is, do I take the elevator or the stairs? Do I have hot fudge sundae or do I have some fruit? There's no absolutes. And what I tell them too is fit people cheat on their food. They just do it in moderation. And then they know they're as good as their next meal. So if they have a bad meal, their next meal, they make it really good. So you can do that, I believe, and that's practicing. And you can do that with reliable happiness. You practice it. You say, okay, what would a person who has found reliable happiness, what would they do in each situation? And right. You say, okay, you try and do it. Or maybe you're looking in retrospectively and you're going, okay, well, what did I do? Did I do the choice somebody who was on that path would take? And if the answer is no, set it, adjust, and forget. And then you just keep going. I always like to say I take wrong turns until I get there. Now, if I'm going to your house and you're the next right turn, yeah. I can take 5 left turns and get there too. Yeah. So, you know, that's what life's about. Nobody's perfect. Nobody's ever going to be perfect. You know, I believe Jesus was the only perfect life. And so, but you can still aspire to be better, to go in that direction. And that's, once again, I think what you're doing is what the attraction of the show was to me, somebody who always, you know, was always reading the self-help books and always, that the attraction to the show is, you know, being part of something, not only helping myself, but being part of something that can help so many people, because the world needs to have this conversation.
Yeah, we're all dying for it. We're like drinking from a fire hose. We need to have it. There's no doubt about it, but the forum has got to be right, and it's got to be opened. That's why I love this, because now he can talk, and now others aren't going to feel that they can
right.
talk.
Right, I mean,
their story. And hey, Tom, the thing that's amazing too is you've been doing this your whole life, haven't you? And doing it pretty much on your own.
You know, sometimes more or less, sometimes mindfully, and many times not mindfully. But there's always been that overarching, you know, where am I going? When our children were born, that was huge. And I remember a book that you actually gave me. You probably remember this book. It's called The Man in the Mirror.
Oh, yeah. I remember it very well.
He references it often.
Patrick Morley, whatever. But there were some great things in there. One of the chapters, he really taught me how to pray and taught me that the most important thing you do for your children is pray for them. That's kind of, and I pray for my children every day. And, you know, but what do you pray for? Too, you know, I can tell you, I pray for every day. I pray for my children to reach their full potential, to strive for excellence in all they do, to be leaders in the Christian faith and reach their full potential as Christians and as human beings. And you know, that's more or less what's happening. I mean, I haven't really been latched on to formal religion, but their values and everything are right in line with that. And I always thought my grandmother prayed for me, my mother's mother. She never told me, but I always really believed that she prayed for me. And Lisa and I have had some, I don't want to get off track, but we've had some spiritual experiences in the past, actually early this year in the spring with our brother and sister and Lisa's mom that passed away, all very close to each other. And so much so that I'm convinced that there is an afterlife, and there's something out there. I have absolutely no doubts. And but that's whatever form it may take. I very much respect people's beliefs, and I just know that there's something out there, and it's based around love. And it's out there for us at some point on that level.
I love your open-mindedness. I love your open-mindedness. The belief and that hope that there's something there, but I can see that openness. So what form that takes in other people's mind is fine with you too, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
That's one thing we said the other day. I think it's kind of a minimum ticket to admirable friendship. Is you
talked
have
about
that open
last
mind.
Thursday night.
We said that the other day, Tom. I don't know what you feel about it, but someone said, well, you're very, very inclusive, almost anybody. And I said, yeah, but I don't think they'll stick around if they have a closed mind.
Yes, I heard that. Yes, I agree.
You think there's any truth to that?
An open mind is very, very important. And that's one thing that I feel, I've always had an open mind. I think young life I had, even in high school, I wasn't part of a clique. I was like, I was friendly with all the different, I didn't have a lot of close friends. I had maybe one really close friend in high school, but I was, friendly with everybody. I could relate to the jocks as well as I could relate to the intellectuals as well as I could relate to the hippies. Just respected where they were coming from. And I've held that my whole life.
Interesting. So, we cruised right through the break, and I want to keep going, Carol, if we can.
Absolutely.
Because there's no sense in playing the jingle just for the sake, because I can't believe we're like at 20 minutes left. But
Springsteen doesn't take breaks.
What's that?
I said, you're like Springsteen. He doesn't take breaks.
Yeah. The boss man. So, relating to that that prayer for your kids, I want to go back to that. How, the third mind quality that we work with is goodwill. And you've been through the last cycle on goodwill and wishing others, which is basically wishing others to be reliably happy. How close is that prayer of yours to the goodwill, the practice of goodwill?
Oh, yeah, I think it's very close because I'm wishing them, I'm not wishing specific things for them. I'm just wishing that they reach their full potential, that they, loving, caring, very general.
Right. So let's get to that. What does reliable happiness mean to you then? Which is kind of our end point in the training program. What does that mean to you?
I think to me right now, it kind of is, it's when I talked about my mom, the Buddha. It's finding that nice level where I don't get too high, don't get too low. I mean, you hear professional athletes talk about it. You're trying to stay on an even keel. If you get too high, you get too low, it's hard to be consistent. And so to me, it's just to be, and I think your audience, and I'm sure many of them know, have already realized this, but they need to understand that, God or whoever we believe in wired us, but somehow we're wired. We're wired to have feelings and to have grief and happiness. I mean, if something, God forbid, happened to someone in my family right now, I would grieve. I would be down.
Right.
You go through that cycle. But to me, reliable happiness is knowing that you're going through the cycle and to accept it and knowing that you're going to come out on the other end. This isn't going to mess up other lives. No matter how bad it is, it's not going to mess up other lives. You're going to grieve. You're going to go through that. You have to go through that process. So
that reliable happiness is actually happiness through sadness, being true to your sadness.
It's being true to whatever emotion you're feeling. I tell the people in my spinning class, I'm going to make you feel uncomfortable. And I don't want you to judge the uncomfortableness. I don't want you to say, be scared of it, because it's good stress. It's going to help you. But I also don't want you to ignore it. A lot of people say, well, I was running in a race. And I was really hurting, but I just ignored it. I don't want you to ignore it. I want you to just feel it and be with it. And that's what's going to happen. There's times in our lives we have to grieve. We've been through my family last couple of years, some tough things. I've had to get my wife through and the rest of the family through, and we did. And so it can be tough, but you have to just be with it and just realize, okay, this is what life has dealt me right now, and that's the way my mother has led her life. I see her now in the nursing home. I used to tell her, Mom, this nursing home is just like an apartment on steroids. I'm going to take you out. We're going to do stuff. I just need somebody to care for you all the time, which I can't do. And I see her now making the best of it. she said, this is my lot in life, and that's what I'm going to do. And we all have different potentials. Not everybody has the potential to go out to be the president of the United States or to be a congressman or be a manager in their business. Just like any team, you've got role players. And so you've got to realize what your potential is and just work towards your full potential. And that also helps you get through these periods. So we're not saying reliable happiness means we're sitting here, oh, something bad happened, but we're happy. Not at all. Not at all. It means being with that, being with the emotions, but being on an even keel and not being derailed by them, just letting the process go through, come out the other end. And the same thing when you have a lot of really great things that happen with you. You know, you enjoy the moment, but don't, you know, make more of it than it is. And just keep going reliably.
What I found, and that's so powerful, but what kind of came up to my mind, Tom, was that when you don't put any kind of label on it or preconceived idea of the grieving or the suffering or how it should be or how it should feel, like you're telling your spinning class, you know, it's going to be uncomfortable, but don't judge it. That leaves such an open kind of void for an experience to happen that you probably didn't even anticipate. And that could be so powerful as well, whether it's grief or joy. It just kind of makes that whole experience so full and in technicolor.
Yes, and I remember one of the shows you did earlier where you and Buddy were talking about the two arrows, right, Buddy?
Yeah, second arrow.
The second arrow, and that's why. So related to a spinning class, so you can relate to that maybe. But, okay, you know it's going to get uncomfortable. Some people start getting themselves all hyped up about, oh, you know, and they're starting to feel uncomfortable even before they, you know, in their mind, before their body even feels uncomfortable. It's kind of the same thing. You took the first arrow, but you can control the second arrow. So just, you know, relax, get through.
The first arrow is mandatory. The second is optional.
That's right.
Yes. That was great when you guys said that. That was fabulous.
Okay, so now you've given us a great definition for reliable happiness. You're going to be my poster boy from now on. let's shift gears to, I feel like that guy on the Actors Studio. What does he say?
Oh, James Lipton.
Okay, Tom, what does admirable friends mean to you?
I think we talked a little bit about that already. You know, it's someone I can talk about deep issues with, someone that I respect, that I feel we're on the same wavelength, even though we may have some different beliefs.
Right.
But we can discuss them respectfully and with an open mind towards each other.
Right.
And help each other and realize that neither one of us is perfect. And ideally we complement each other. One of the beauties of the job I have now, once again, I'm a number two guy. The number one guy and I really complement each other well. You know, his strengths are my weaknesses and my strengths are his weaknesses, and we just cover for each other. And I think in a friendship, that's one level you can do that. But it's also someone who's going to tell me when I'm really off pace, when I'm getting off track, is not going to just tell me what I want to hear. Is going to tell me, hey, Tom, I really feel this. And once again, because I have an open mind and my admirable friends have open minds, we can have that conversation. And that's very powerful.
So it's not a total package. You see admirable qualities in others. So you, You don't expect the whole deal out of everybody.
No, I think that's why I've been so open to, you know, having friends, or people, you know, with varying backgrounds. Is that I'm open to what they're about, where they're coming from. And I can say, well, you know, I'm not really that much like this person in a lot of ways, but I see this one thing in them. And once again, buddy, relating it to you and I back in the 80s, I saw this level to you that maybe a lot of people didn't see. I saw the compassion. I saw the, I looked at you and I said, there's somebody, boy, if he puts his focus in the right place, can change people's lives. Because, you know, throw your strengths out there and people can see. I mean, you actually have to tone down your things. You know,
Tom, put things in perspective. We were building software. We're making all kinds of money. How did you see that?
We were in the fast lane. But I saw through that. I saw there was something there. I said, I really, really like this guy. And this guy has tremendous potential to do things he doesn't even know about yet. I'm serious. I had these thoughts in my mind. And
now, let's keep the show going tonight, huh?
Maybe extend it
a little. Thanks, Tom. Honestly, you're too kind. But I guess it always, that's what's the beauty of not stepping out of your own way. Maybe people see you better than you see yourself sometimes.
Oh, yeah, and you always saw me better. You always, and you do this to people, and that's what you're big. That's what's huge with you, and the people you're working with now, I know will say this. You always had more faith in me than I had in myself, and I know you do that to people. You bring out the best of people.
That's true.
That's why you were able to be so successful in business, but that's why you're going to be so successful in what you're doing now, and you make people see that, wow, you know, I'm even better than I thought. You know, you have such faith in people and their abilities, and that is huge. I've always found, you know, if I had a coach in sports that really believed in me, I would play so much better against the same competition than I would if a coach didn't really believe in me. It's the same competition, all of a sudden I couldn't play well, or I could get 30 points. Yeah.
What's amazing here, Tom, though, it's really, I want our audience to know that you're practicing this way, but you don't regularly meditate, do you?
No. I try to go times, but it just hasn't been right for me.
But the reason I want to make that point is you have, like Covey says, you have to put if you're trying to fill up a beaker, a jar, you know, you have to put the big rocks in, the middle-sized rock, and the sand to fit the most volume in the jar. Well, the big rocks are what you're talking about with your life. Meditation becomes a tool for that, but that's not the end. You know, you've had your head wired. You've had your head wired correctly. You're learning from your mistakes. You got your values right. You've asked that question from the get-go. And the beauty is somebody could start asking that question now, even if they never did it. You know, they can learn from you, Tom, and start asking it tomorrow. But you kept asking, what is it I have to do, right, to be the best I can be and be the best to others? And you just kept learning from your mistakes. So it's kind of like Mr. Magoo, right? You hit a wall and you just keep going. And it's that simple. It's that fundamental. And when you live that kind of life, I think you'll eventually meditate because you'll say, well, I could slow down and make better choices. But you haven't had to, have you? I mean, you keep asking that question.
Yeah.
Like you say, as I get older in life, I'm recognizing I have to live a more, you know, you're starting to show restraint. You're simplifying your life. And it's just everybody's different, but I love your priorities. That you just have them so straight. You know, you've got your values and your priorities correctly. And it's just so often people think meditation is like the answer. But I mean, it's a great thing. I mean, I'm a big advocate of it.
Yes, but it's not the only.
It's not the only thing.
No. And you know, I tried it, and you're right. It hasn't been right for me. And at first, I was feeling bad about that, and then I realized, like you just said, meditation is not the end game. It's practice. It's like you're practicing foul shots.
Yeah.
It's practice.
I know our oldest son was getting into plants, and he did a heck of a job meditating by taking care of his plants every day. We saw his demeanor change. His discernment was better. His emotional balance was better. His equanimity, which is what you talked about as your end game for reliable happiness. All that can come in your everyday life as well, as long as you're intentional about the way you approach it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's what I found. I was feeling badly at first, like, you know, I'm trying this, but it's just not working for me. And then I realized that, and once again, this program, the 10 qualities, really helped me, because I said, wow, I can practice these in my everyday life. That's what practicing is. Practicing is what we do each day. You know, we're on the road here, and we're trying things and saying, okay, Al, buddy, and Carol had some thoughts, and I'm going to try that out, see how it works. You know, practice it a little bit. And, you know, when I mentioned the forgiveness in advance, I texted you or emailed you and said, I'm practicing this. I'm practicing forgiving in advance.
Yeah, well, where do we have our social network together? Because you're going to be able to pass that on to others. Once we have our Facebook, where you can actually type that stuff in, and all these little things you're finding out that you can share with others, you know, then we can have all these conversations going on dynamically during the day.
Yeah, you know? I think if you find something that you really do well and relate everything else to that, for me it's been, fitness. And I'm very mindful about what I eat. So even if I'm going to go downstairs now, we brought some cake over, I'm going to have some cake. But I'm just mindful. I'm just aware of what I'm putting in my body. So then I start applying that to the rest of my life and say, so that's what being mindful is. It's just like, you know, you're not always going to do the right thing, but you're just going to be mindful. You're going to just think about the same way I'm thinking about the food I put in my body, and what do I feel that's fuel, and I'm fueling, and once in a while I have something for pleasure, because I can. And same with the rest of my life. Let's just practice mindfully.
Right. Notice along the way. Go ahead.
I'm sorry?
I said notice along the way when you actually practice that mindfulness how you're getting out of your own way. And what I mean by that is you're stepping out of your narrative. You know, that typical self-talk that's going on, whether it's beating yourself up or, you know, just destructive thinking. The moment you start, you know, doing that and pay attention to what you're doing, you shift out of that conversation with yourself. So you come out of your way and you notice things that you otherwise wouldn't notice. But what I'm saying is when you do that, notice that, because that reinforces why you should practice mindfulness in your everyday life, because it gets you out of your own way.
Yeah. And you know, I'm finding things too. Like one of my wife, the fabulous Lisa, her pet peeves is, I'll be like daydreaming. Yeah. I think Carol talked about this in an earlier show, you know, driving down the road, not being sure where you are.
All of a sudden you wake up and you said, I don't even know how many houses I just passed or why.
In that case, what would you do? Grab the steering wheel. You grab the steering wheel, you feel the leather on your fingers, and next thing you know, you're out of your own way and you're back to driving again.
Yeah, so now I'm thinking about all this. I'm always thinking about stuff, and then sometimes I forget to be in the present.
Yeah.
And so that's something I know I got to work on more, being in the present.
But I think you can relate that to your physical fitness and the way there's no way, I know how fit you are at your age, there's no way that you get that fit without you paying attention to the reps and to the body sensations associated with your exercise. So every time that you go and you stop the kind of monkey mind thinking and you go to the rep or go to the feeling and the sensation, that's a practice in mindfulness, isn't it?
Yeah, and also mindfulness, because you also know when to take to rest.
Right.
So I really listen to my body, and I know when to push it and when to back off. And so I'm trying to apply that to the rest of my life. And it's going to be a lifetime, working process. I'll keep working at it.
So your discernment in everyday life, though, to use the subject here, and you've been doing nothing but talking about discernment, so even though we haven't really related on the show, walking discernment the way I see it. Do you see that, Carol?
I do.
Yeah. I mean, you take that problem
solver.
It needs
no introduction. It's all been
he's thinking
statements
and breaking things down and asking the questions. But I do think all his questions that he's asking at the detail level relate to his one big question. And I'm just going to kind of feed this back to our audience and to you, Tom. If you didn't have that one big question of what's most important to your life and wanting to be reliably happy and, you know, your spiritual and religious beliefs, if you didn't have that, I don't think you'd be asking these little questions.
No, that's the anchor.
It is. It's your driving force. I can hear it. Because everything is within that context. You have a context for your life. You've got the thing that's most important to you. You've got your tombstone already written. So as a result, that's what's driving all of this discernment and all of this, should I do this or shouldn't I do that? There's a context for that, isn't there?
Oh, yeah.
Right? That's even how you went back and looked at your job and say, no, this job better served my mission of wanting to be the person I can be and be the family man I am and develop your character. Your job is consistent with that, right? That's why you stayed with your job as long as you did.
Oh, yeah. And you know, I just love what I do, and we've been through our share of tough times there, and we just went through a period now where we had you know, some people that weren't on the same page, and we had to deal with that. But I just love what I do, and it's been great for me, great for my family.
Well, that's let's see. I guess we've covered most everything that we had as an outline, and a lot more. Boy, I'll tell you, Carol, this is great.
It's been a wonderful evening.
Yeah,
it's been just wonderful.
It's
thank you very much for asking me to come on.
And the great thing is, this is all on podcast.
It is,
you know, so everybody can get it, and we can take clips of it and listen to Tom again. I hope
and re-experience the little tidbits and the advice and the pearls of wisdom and the sharing that went on tonight. It's really nice.
Yeah, it's inspiring. You ever think you'll start an Admirable Friends conversation up there in New England, Tom? Did you ever think that might be possible?
What was that?
You ever think you might start, you know, the vision I have is having an actual Admirable Friends radio station. So every hour on the hour, there's an Admirable Friends discussion going on like this. Sure. And wondering if you ever thought that this might be something you'd want to do up in New England sometime.
Yeah, I would consider it, you know.
Good, it's done. I'll send you up in the world.
Once again, you're giving me more credit than I give myself.
You got it wired. You've got the big picture. Like I said, the big rocks are in the jar. The sand and the middle-sized rocks will fit in without a problem.
Yeah.
You know, you've got the big question. It reminds me of that movie with City Slickers when that, what was his name, Jack? Put that
Jack Palance.
It's one thing in life you have to know. You've got your one thing figured out. You got your one thing figured out, so everything else falls in line. Beautiful life, Tom. Thank you so much for sharing.
Thanks, Tom. We really appreciate you coming on tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. I love you guys.
Take care. We love you. I love you. Take care, buddy.
Bye.
Bye-bye. See you all next week.
Admirable Friends is about discovering personal solutions to life's everyday challenges. We welcome the support of like-minded individuals to help reveal our inner wisdom. Our listeners display virtuous values based on varying religious and secular perspectives. Yet our common desire is to live authentic lives that lead to reliable happiness. With many distractions at work and at home, we struggle to live up to our ideals. Yet there are times when we triumph. By generously sharing these first-person experiences, our resolve to live authentically is recharged, and our admirable friendship is strengthened. Together, each week, we explore an unwanted emotion and its matching ideal mind quality. The overriding context of our journey is what, when we do it, leads us out of stress and towards reliable happiness. We're grateful to have you join us today.